Hey guys, welcome to the Challenge Podcast. I'm Coach Steve.
And I'm Coach Nick, and we're going to be talking about everything fitness, health, and the challenge.
Let's get on with the show.
What's up guys, Coach Steve here, and welcome back to another episode of the Challenge Weekly Show. I'm here with our co-host, Coach Nick. Coach Nick, how are we doing today?
I'm really well, Coach Steve. How are you?
I'm good. It's a great week this week, like always. And officially, the May Challenge has wrapped up, Nick. It's been an exciting journey.
Yes. Yeah, we wrapped it up on Friday night with the awards night, which is always a really wonderful celebration. So that was really good.
It was a great night. You know, we had a couple of hundred people watching it live. We had a couple of thousand of people watching it over the weekend. And it was a great time to announce our top 10, our top three. And we also had the People's Choice Award and the Community Awards as well. So it was a great evening and a very eventful night, which is always fun to do. Then Nick, you know, we've got a week here where you and I are working hard to upload all the new plans and the information onto the challenge website. And then we're rolling straight into our next challenge, the August challenge, our very first 6-week challenge. This is going to be a roller coaster over 6 weeks, hey?
It is. It's going to go really quickly. And I'm excited. I just want to start it straight away, but we've got a few days. So we've got to get it all ready for everybody. Right.
Well, look, let's briefly talk about this 6-week challenge. So we are starting our prep weekend on the 27th of August. That's this Friday. And that's going to be from 9 a.m. So from 9 a.m., you're going to be able to log into the challenge website. You'll be able to download your training plan, your nutrition plan. You'll be able to complete your profile. You can upload a starting photo. You can insert some information. If you need to, you can change your program. If you'd like to have a little sticky notes on what all the other plans look like, you can ask us all the questions on the forum. Nick and I basically live there when the challenge is on. We're living on the forum answering any question that you may have. Then we've also got a range of information in our resources area on the challenge website as well. So there's lots to do over that weekend. And of course, once you get the plans themselves, you can go and test out some of the training programs. You can go shopping and get ready to try some of the food items that are on the nutrition plan as well. And then hopefully getting ready to do some meal prep for the challenge starting on Monday. So technically on the 30th of August, we'll be kicking off that 6-week challenge, Nick.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, don't be scared if you feel that you don't have enough time. You will learn it anyway. It will become second nature to you. But just say you can't go shopping on the weekend for whatever reason. We did say in our last podcast, but I'll just say it again. Just stock up on healthy foods, rice, chicken, beef, basic stuff, and veggies, and then also just get rid of the junk from your house. So that's the real basic stuff that we would tell anybody to do right now. That's our little heads up.
Yeah, absolutely. And I do think genuinely deep down, every single person knows what they should be eating. Okay. We all know that we shouldn't be having, chocolate every day and ice cream after dinner and, snacking on lollies all day. And we know that we shouldn't be having that, iced frappuccino with 3 sugars from Starbucks and, drinking cans of soft drink all day. Like, we know these things, and we know that we should be having more fruits and vegetables. We know that we should be drinking more water and having good sources of protein and not overeating. Like, we know these things deep down. The challenge helps gives us a little bit of structure on how to consume foods and how to get it, more on that optimal side of things. But we ultimately know what we should be eating. So if you are a little bit lost about what you should be doing, well, like what Nick said, yeah, go out, buy some fruits and vegetables, get rid of some of the sweets in your house and all those items that you know you shouldn't be having. Maybe put them in a little locked up case for another time in the year. But the challenge is, as the name suggests, a challenge is going to be tough. And I want you to get prepared for that and set your expectations for a tough 6 weeks. Then it's going to be in, out, we're going to be fast, it's going to be hard, it's going to be good.
That's right. It's going to be the toughest one yet, simply because it's shorter. And that should be exciting. I'm excited by that. I think it's going to draw on all sorts of things. It's going to draw on your creativity. If you're somewhere that doesn't have a lot of equipment, you're going to have to get your resources all set up. And, what you can do now is you can start walking. You can start walking right now while you're listening to this. If you're sitting down listening to it in your lounge room, pop your earphones in and just go and do some steps straight away. You'll feel better. And that's one of the key things in the challenge as well, to get some steps in.
No, totally agree. And I think that's something we could all do today, right now. And I know that many of you listening to this are are doing your steps right now while you're listening to Nick and I talk about fitness and health, or maybe you've got a treadmill at home or a bike, or you're going for a ride yourself, or even just walking around the block, you know, getting some physical activity in is just so powerful. And it doesn't need to be running. It doesn't need to be, you know, slogging it out at 10 out of 10 effort. It can just be a nice leisurely walk, can be the great first steps to your fitness journey.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So it's a challenge, but it's sort of, once you get to know it, it's actually so simple in its routine and in what you have to do to actually achieve it. It's just about consistency. So just remember that there's a lot of simplicity in it. It's just about kind of going back to basics with everything and finding a routine.
Yeah, no, totally agree. And I think the name challenge, you know, every single individual will have their own unique challenges when it comes to the challenge. So your challenge might be that, you know, you don't have motivation to go to the gym or to exercise. Your challenge might be that you really love having ice cream after dinner. Your challenge might be that you don't have a super supportive friendship group and they love to catch up for pizza and beers on the weekend. Your challenge might be that you've got a sore knee that stops you from training and exercising. Or your challenge might be that you don't have the resources to exercise. You're training at home, you don't have a resistance band or a dumbbell or anything like that. Everybody's challenge is going to be unique to them. And I hope that we are here to help guide you through your challenges. But once you find out what your challenge is and you overcome that, oh gosh, it's just a snowball effect and everything's happy days. But it's about finding that challenge and then overcoming that and not just succumbing to that obstacle in the way.
Exactly. And if you just do that, that's just going to, as you said, set up a chain of events. So, even do a little bit of, if you can, a little bit of journaling. Just write down. It doesn't have to be in an extravagant leather-bound notebook, but just write down a few things that you think might challenge you and a few ways that you think that you might be able to overcome them, even in the next few days. And then even if you're like, oh, I'm scared about what I'm going to get in my inbox on Friday, you know, what am I going to do? How do I start? Even writing that down, you can then break it down and see what it is that you're actually scared of. So that's another little tip, I reckon.
Yeah, totally agree. And I do think that there is power in that planning for the future, especially if you know that, oh, when I am stressed out, I stress eat. That might be your challenge. You might say that, oh, well, I've got my kid's birthday coming up in 2 weeks' time and they want to have cake on the weekend. What am I going to do? Like writing out some of these challenges, maybe it's an event, maybe it's a thing coming up, maybe you've got like a high workload at stress, whatever it is. Sorry, a high workload at work if it's really stressful, whatever it is, that's a unique challenge for you. And if you sat there right now while you're in a positive mind frame and go, okay, well, when this happens, what am I going to do? So it's like a very logical statement. Like if this happens, then I'm going to do this. And if you were to plan out some of these things, oh gosh, you are so prepared. You're ready to go at whatever challenge the challenge throws at you. You'll be ready for it.
Yeah, that's right. And then also, as you said, like if you're in a positive frame of mind, you are less likely to make those decisions that we all make that later on we're going to regret. They can be big ones or small ones, but it's when you make a decision on the back of emotion rather than logic. So logically you can go, I can get prepared for this, but then you might be tired on Friday. You might have had a full day of work. You might go, oh, this is just too much. So which mindset do you want to use to tackle this?
Totally agree.
Anything in life. You know, don't make decisions when you're emotional. I'm Italian, so like I do make decisions when I'm emotional, but I try not to anymore. I try and be a little bit more mature.
I like it. Another challenge that some challengers face in the challenge, there you go, challenge three times in a sentence.
Triple C.
Is the how we portray our information. Now on the challenge, there is lots of information, lots of data, lots of numbers to look at. You know, we're talking about, you know, how much each portion of food weighs, how many reps we're doing, how much weight we're lifting, how many steps we did, what's our body weight. You know, we've got lots of numbers, lots of information, lots of data. And part of that is to help manage that information, which is a reason why we choose to host all of our programs on a spreadsheet so that we can use some calculation, we can use some math, we can use some, you know, some formulas to help you manage your information so that you know that you're being successful in your journey. Okay. Now, of course, spreadsheets come with their own, you know, challenges and their own frustrations. And sometimes it can be complicated to look at some of these computer-based software. So we host our programs on Google Sheets, Google Sheets, and that's in the Google ecosystem, okay? The reason why is one, it's free for everybody, so anybody can get a Google account for free, and it's on the cloud, which means that you can use it on your phone, on a computer, on your work computer, on a tablet, wherever you are, you can just log in and have access to it. If that was on something like an Excel, you probably have to pay for Microsoft Excel and then you know might be stuck on your computer. You need it at the supermarket, you don't have it on your phone, or you need it in the gym, you don't have it on your phone. So we like that flexibility of the cloud so that it constantly kind of saves itself on the cloud. Then you can have access anywhere that you need to. So if you're listening to this and you've never used Google Suites before, so that's you know Google Docs, Google Sheets, Google Slides, I would invite you to spend 5 minutes, just Google, use Google and Google Google Sheets, and you can just click in and you can maybe sign in or you can just sign up. So all you need is just an email. You don't even need a Google email. You can just have any email and just sign in, create a Google account. Then you might play around with it going, okay, this is where the spreadsheet will be stored. This is what Google Drive is. You know, that would be like an online storage system, kind of like, you know, like iCloud or OneDrive or Dropbox. You know, they're all similar cloud-based storage things. So I would recommend that you spend a little bit of time playing around with that because we always have access to PDFs, okay? So we always create PDFs so for those of us who don't want to have the spreadsheet template experience. There's a PDF there, great, happy days. But we do kind of miss out on a lot of tech and intellect and lots of you know algorithm and calculations and lots of logic that's being built into your templates, your nutrition plan and your training plan, your templates there. You kind of miss out on that if you are going down that PDF pathway. So I do want you to experience the flexibility that is in the templates, the accountability that's there, the math that's there, and a great way to organize that data so that you know if you're making a change. Because you could look at yourself in the mirror every day and go, oh, I'm just not noticing anything. But unless we were able to measure it and quantify it and go, well, yeah, I am moving in the right direction. Great, keep on going. Do it, rather than if you're just staring at yourself every day going, well, I'm trying lots of different things, nothing's really working. Well, do you know if it's working or not? But I digress, that's my TED talk. But spend some time, go check out the Google Suites and basically get ready for this weekend where we have created these really cool templates for you to play around with and organize your training and nutrition.
Yeah, so definitely that's another hot tip that you can do before anything is released is just get familiar with all of that Google, the Google ecosystem. Get familiar with it because on Friday you don't want to go, I don't even know what this Google thing is. You don't want to do that. You can know what it is now.
Well, look, Nick, let's go through our non-scale victories this weekend. For our non-scale victories, I'd like to celebrate or re-celebrate our top 10. So our top 10 Maxines and our top 10 Maxine finalists. So if you haven't already, go check out our awards night. So that was live streamed to our Facebook support group, and that was just last Friday, which was a great evening. It was the 20th, Friday the 20th. We kicked off at 7:30 p.m. Like I said, there was a couple hundred people watching it live. There was loads of comments and celebrations afterwards, and many people taking screenshots of themselves who were in the top 10 or even the top 50. It was a great night. So go check out that beat and experience the awards night of what it was. And we'll be doing another awards night for this 6-week challenge. And hopefully you can join us for that awards night there.
Absolutely.
Nick, let's go through alphabetical order of our top 10. And I'm just going to name them out here. So for the guys, we've got Daniel Mundy, which is Great Transformation, and Joe Wallace. We've got Matt Whitechurch and Michael Malone. We've got Peter Venz and Rob Bone. We've got Sean Fisher and Stuart Ball. Great transformations for the guys. And last year, we've got Tony Abernethy and Tristan Grossman. So that was our top 10 for the guys. And I'm going to invite you to go head on over to the Max's Challenge website. And you could see the top 10. You can see their transformation. You can read their profile, their stories. Each one of these top 10s have a very detailed story, which is really cool to see. And you may even find that, you know, you are quite similar to someone in the top 10. You may find that, wow, I actually kind of look like, you know, this guy in the top 10, or maybe I have a similar situation as, you know, this other person in the top 10. And that could be a great way to, you know, relate to someone being like, wow, they could do it. I could do it too.
Absolutely.
For the girls, we have Andrea Ball, whose partner, Stuart Ball, got in the top 10. So that was really cool. Two top 10s, male and female, put together. We've got Arielle Simpson. We have Carmen Woodenberg and Haley Thomas. We have Jackie Watson and Kelly Hardisty. Kirsty Schrappel and Melissa Klaus.
Klaus, yes, killer.
And then Michelle Edmead and then Tamara Hunter. So that was our top 10. So congratulations to our top 10 Max and Maxine finalists. And then, of course, with the top three, for the guys, in first place, we have Daniel Mundy, second place, Michael Malone, and third place, Joe Wallace. And then for the girls, first place, we had Jackie Watson, second place, Haley Thomas, and third place, Melissa Klaus. Klaus in the house.
Klaus in the house.
Klaus in the house. So if you don't know that reference in the awards night, Nick and I didn't know how to pronounce Melissa's last name, and we asked her to send us a video on how to pronounce her last name, and she did, and we have now learned how to pronounce her last name. So it's not
We're obsessed with it.
Yeah.
Oh, like, yeah. I think we said, like, it was probably the worst.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
But anyway, she's set us straight now. So that's really good. Thank you, Melissa.
Thank you, Melissa. But look, congratulations to our top 10. Like I said, we will be contacting a lot of the top 10s to invite them onto the Challenge podcast here. So if they are willing to accept, you might find future episodes with our top 10s and you could really hear their story. And you may find, again, that these top 10s are just people like you. And if they could do it, you could do it too. So work hard and look at the inspiration of our top 10.
Yeah, I love that. Love that. That's the thing. We're all not too far off each other, and we can find similarities. And it's good because maybe your circle isn't necessarily super inspirational. Maybe you're the inspirational person in that. So it's good to surround yourself with inspirational people. So sometimes podcasts and things like that can help you widen your circle a little bit and see that it is normal to eat well and want to be better.
Totally agree. Now, Nick, let's move on to our coaches' corner. So our coaches' corner is a space where Nick and I will offer you our tips for the week. So Nick, would you like to start us off today?
Yes, please. I would like to talk a little bit about habit stacking. So it's a really good time to talk about forming sustainable habits that are actually, they're just little, like, say, bricks in the wall of your challenge fort, let's just say. So just say you live inside your challenge fort, you'll like this. This will be good. This will be right up your alley. And, each habit is a little brick just building this fort around you to make sure that nothing's going to penetrate this fort, no dragons, nothing's going to stop you from doing your challenge. So these little habits, sometimes a way to create a habit is to stack it with another habit, so put it with a different habit. So say, for example, my favourite one, something that I do. So I love different education around fitness, different fitness podcasts, things like that. So every time I go for a walk, I pop a podcast on. So I'm getting my steps and I'm also then getting, some form of education or entertainment or whatever you like to call it at once. Another one that I like to do is when I'm having my coffee, I will make sure that I check all the different things that I have to do on social media in the day and create that routine. I feel like I've taken care of that. A fitness one is probably a good idea. So this is just a habit that I have. Every time I finish one session, I will set up for the next session. So I won't leave it. I'll set up for the next session, which also includes choosing the clothes that I'm going to wear and putting them next to my bed. So I still do that to this day because nobody in the world is going to necessarily always want to get up at 5:30. And if I know what I'm wearing and I've got it all set out, that helps me to then get on with the day. So you can see where I'm going with this, can't you? That creating little habits that then feed into other habits are the way of actually creating sort of a successful routine.
I like it. Yeah. No, I think I totally do that too, where, like, every step that I've done in my fitness journey, I've tried to piggyback off of other habits that it makes it easier, right? And I guess, like, for me, like, maybe when I'm going for things like a walk, like, I'd walk my dog and I actually choose not to listen to anything while I'm walking. But for me, it becomes a very meditative state where you know, I'm going for this 20 minute, half an hour walk and I'm not really thinking about anything. I'm just kind of like, you know, enjoying the trees, maybe the breeze of the wind and, you know, looking at the flowers and just kind of having that, like, you know, mind wandering session. But then that's where I usually find my most creative experiences. So when it comes down to that debate of, oh, you know, should you be meditating and such, like, that's now become a habit that I do, you know, every day when I'm walking the dog. And that becomes just something that I almost look forward to, being like this peace time for myself.
Absolutely. It's so important to be able to spend time on your own as well. I think just being able to spend time without any distractions is so important.
Shane. Because habits are really difficult to start. And if you can piggyback off of another habit, oh gosh, 10 times easier, hey?
They are. So I think it works. I think it works well because it's usually something that you do with your current habits in mind as well. So it's not like it's such a huge change for you. You know, it's not something that you have to completely overhaul. So say, for example, you drink a coffee in the morning, but you don't think maybe to have breakfast or something, that could be something that you could then add in. If you're someone who's like, oh, I don't eat breakfast, I don't like it, it's something that you could possibly stack on top of your coffee and go, maybe I'll just start with a protein shake or something along those lines. And then, you know, that's a way to sort of start to build good routines and habits.
Yeah, I like that. Especially something like, let's say you have a routine at the moment where you wake up, the first thing you do is walk to the coffee machine or you turn on the kettle to make a coffee. Okay, maybe while the kettle's boiling or the coffee machine's warming up, maybe you have a routine where in that time when it's warming up, you get changed into some sort of non-bed clothes. Okay, so you're putting on some pants and maybe some socks and putting some shoes on even. Then once the coffee's been made, maybe you put it into a keep cup or a travel mug instead of like a coffee cup. And then you drink your coffee while you go for a walk around the block. So now you've piggybacked off that habit of having a coffee every morning and you've introduced a way to get your steps. So then maybe a new habit you have is you start having your coffee while you go for a walk around the block. Then you can stack onto that where you now bring maybe your phone with like maybe some headphones. So now you're listening to something educational like you do, Nick. You've got your coffee in your hands. You've got that original habit. And then now you're doing a walk. And then you could slowly stack on top of that. You go for a bigger walk, right? And then maybe soon you choose to have the coffee first. Then you go out and have a walk. So then now you're doing a half an hour walk rather than a walk around the block. So you're slowly building up onto that, into that idea of just simply going for a walk, which can be a big daunting thing for some individuals. I get that, totally understand. But now, I guess for you and I, it just seems like something that we do because it's not something that takes a lot of effort. It's part of our routine.
That's right. And up until lockdown, because now my mum lives further than 5Ks away from me, so I can't walk with her. But up until lockdown, we were every single day at 5 a.m. we would meet and walk in the dark together and then go to the coffee shop and get a coffee. And so that was actually like a way to socialise as well. So that was what I used to do, and I hopefully will do again, used to make the walk into a way to obviously get exercise, but also to catch up with mum and have our social time together as well and start the day really on a good note, having like already done maybe about 8,000, 9,000 steps. So that was a really nice thing that I look forward to getting back to as well. Walking can also be done socially. That's the thing. Like if you think, oh gosh, how am I going to do all these steps? You can find a walking buddy, you know, somebody, everybody likes to sort of try and get out there and get a bit of exercise. So it's kind of a cool thing to do at the moment because it's pretty much one of the only things you're allowed to do. So, you know, if you're in lockdown, so it's probably a good time to stack the social habit with the walking habit.
So I'd like to talk a little bit about training and injuries. Okay. And this is off the back of a video that I posted onto my Instagram where I actually got a new PB on my deadlift.
Oh yeah. Well done.
Thank you. So I was pretty happy with it. It was 245 kilos. I solved my problem that I spoke about in a couple of months ago when I got the 240 for our deadlift lift off. Where I didn't have enough space on the barbell. So now I've managed to find a little bit more space on the barbell and use resistance bands instead of clips to hold the weight plates onto the barbell while I lift it. Okay, so I solved that problem. And if you watch the video, you can see that it was a very high effort lift. So it was the 10 on the 10 out of effort. There was a grind, you know, parts of it looked a little bit, like, you know, not pretty. Gosh, it didn't feel pretty. And as soon as I finished the lift, you could see me at the very top of the lift. I'm really short of breath because I couldn't breathe because of the load on my chest. And then I dropped the weight and I actually kind of fell to the floor because of how much effort it was in. And the first thing I did, actually, I started laughing, being like, wow, that was such like a euphoric feeling. Anyway, so the point was, high effort lift. And someone asked me, am I worried that I'm causing any damage from such a high effort lift, as in physical damage, trauma or injury from that lift? And if I think that I was safe doing the lift because I was bracing, I had a weightlifting belt on, I was bracing, you know, holding my breath the through the lift. And I want to talk a little bit about that. Now, the first thing that we need to understand is that with any sorts of physical activity, let that be playing sport, let that be weightlifting, let that be going for a walk, there is a level of risk of injury that we need to be comfortable with, okay? When it comes to weightlifting or bodybuilding or exercising in a gym, it's actually one of the safest sports or activities that we can do, okay? When we look at some studies and some data around injury rates to people who do bodybuilding and weightlifting, it's crazy low compared to other sports like your footy, your netball, your soccer, which are really high levels of injury rates, upwards of, you know, like 50 injuries per 1,000 hours of playing that sport. Whereas in like bodybuilding and weightlifting, you know, the injury rates are as low as, you know, 1 or 2 injuries per 1,000 hours, okay? Now, if you were training, let's say every single day for 3 years, you know, that's close to 1,000, right? And if you're training an hour a day, that could mean that you get 1 or 2 injuries every 3 years in weightlifting, okay? That's when we look at injury rates. So relatively, it's a safe environment to lift something. Now, the next thing we need to appreciate is, how does an injury happen? Because we've all experienced some sort of injury or some ache and pain, or even like a non-time lost injury where we go, oh yeah, my shoulder a little bit icky, but it's not, you know, bad enough that I'm gonna go see a doctor or something about it. So how do these injuries happen? Well, it ultimately comes down to when we use a load that is higher than our capacity, okay? So just kind of like the three little pigs story, you know, where the big bad wolf is gonna huff and puff and blow over the straw house, okay? The straw wasn't strong enough for it. I can't remember what's next, maybe the wood, that's not strong enough for it. But then when it comes to the brick house, you know, that's strong enough to stop the wolf's breath. And that's exactly the same in our body, where our body in certain positions are able to withstand certain loads, but then as soon as we take it out of those positions or into structures that can't withstand the load, that's when trauma can happen, where we, you know, damage that tissue. So that's the thing that we need to understand. So when it comes to actually weightlifting, there's an analogy that I'd like us all to visualize right now. And that's the concept of like a dartboard or like a bullseye, okay? Now, when we're weightlifting, we're trying to actually target the middle of the bullseye every time. So if you're visualizing like a dartboard or a bullseye right now, you've got the bullseye in the middle, and then I want you to visualize maybe 3 or 4 rings around that bullseye. So you've got ring 1, you know, that's just outside that bullseye, ring 2, a little bit further away, ring 3, ring 4, and then even ring 5. So there's different like rings, okay? And of course, if you're more accurate, the bullseye, you're down in the middle, and if you aren't as accurate, you might be at that 5th ring out to the side. Now, when we first start weightlifting, our kind of target is all over the place. We're at ring 5, we're at ring 2, we're at ring 3, ring 5 again, and then ring 1, and then back to maybe the bullseye. So every single rep looks a little bit differently. And what that means is whatever load we're using, we're targeting different tissues. So you might be targeting your quads in rep 1, then your glutes in rep 2, and then your back muscles are taking over in rep 3, and then you get really tired, so your core is taking over at rep 4, and then rep 5, that's when we get this traumatic catastrophe because, you know, the load's all over the place. So to minimize the risk, what we're trying to do is trying to hit that target every single time, so every rep looks the same, every rep feels the same, and every rep is approached in the exact same manner. So for me, when I'm going and practicing my deadlifts, I've deadlifted a certain way for a really long time. My body has adapted to this path that I take when I deadlift. Is it the most optimal, perfect way to deadlift? No. Is it close to optimal for me? Yes. Is there an optimal way that everybody should deadlift? No. Is there an optimal way for you to deadlift? Yes, because your body is very unique to you. You know, your thigh length is very different to mine. Your height is different to mine. Your body mass is different to mine. So there's no exactly one perfect way to lift, but there's, you know, certain principles that make the lift more efficient. But we can train whatever efficiency we take, okay? So thinking about our analogy here, you know, we're trying to target that 1 point every single time. No matter if it's a low effort lift, you know, a 1 out of 10 effort, or a high effort lift, we're trying to hit that target every single time. Now, if there was such thing as a perfect lift, that's our bullseye. And then maybe like, you know, 10% outside of that, so maybe that ring one, that's, you know, our safe zone. We go, okay, yeah, if it's that ring one, great, happy days, you know, no issues. You might get that little bit of an ache and a pain afterwards. Okay. We just manage our load accordingly, that we're not doing like a PB in that first ring. But if you're constantly out at ring five, you know, every rep looks all over the shop, okay, that's a recipe for some sort of trauma to happen. Continuing on with my analogy, there are other external factors that can impact our ability to, you know, throw that dart on the dartboard. So, you know, you can imagine that if you were balancing on one leg, it might be a little bit harder to hit that dartboard than if you had two legs on the ground. Or if you were covering one eye, or if you were intoxicated, or if you had someone standing next to you poking you, it's going to be harder to hit the dartboard. Or if the dartboard was moving as well, okay, it's going to be even harder. So what I'm saying is that there are external factors that can contribute and increase the risk of an injury. Okay, let's talk about them. So some things are things like our training load. If you've been training really hard for weeks on end, that's basically the same as you trying to hit a moving dartboard, okay? We've got lots of load going through our body, and if you are continually trying to lift heavy, that's a recipe for some sort of traumatic event, which is why we utilize things like deloads. That's why we utilize, you know, oscillating weights where we're not, you know, going for PBs every single time. For me, like I attempted that PB because it was the top of a meso. I'd been building myself up for, you know, 4 or 6 weeks so that I was ready to attempt that PB again. Like what I said at the start, I tried that PB months ago where I used resistance bands around the thing. It didn't work. Okay, that was months ago. I built myself up and I tried it again. So I'm not trying a PB every single week because that's just a recipe for an injury. Okay. The other thing would be external stresses. So we all have external stresses in our life, let that be work, family, finance, social situations and, you know, other stresses in life. So we need to manage those accordingly as well. If you're highly stressed, heck, that's a recipe for an injury to occur. That's like, you know, let's say standing on one leg while someone's poking you. Okay, that's going to cause some problems. The next one would be sleep. If you have a poor quality sleep, that might be the same as you being drunk and trying to throw that dartboard. You know, that's a recipe for injury to occur as well. So if you are having low quality sleep, I wouldn't suggest you trying a high effort lift. The next one would be hydration. So if your tissues are poorly hydrated, that's different to if you drink lots of water, because we all say we drink lots of water, but your tissues might not be hydrated. That might be that you, let's say, wake up and you go train straight away. You're probably severely dehydrated from your sleep overnight, and you might take a little bit of time to actually some of your tissues to be hydrated. And especially if you wake up, you have a cup of coffee or a pre-workout, then you're heading to the gym, gosh, you're probably really dehydrated, which is a recipe for some sort of trauma to occur. And then finally, of course, is our environment. So if you are, let's say, training with a buddy or a partner and they're pushing you even harder to try to push your loads, okay, something might happen there. If your buddy's there and wanting to work in with you and you're having shorter rest periods, okay, something might happen there. Or if it's like a highly stressful environment or a new gym or something like that, okay, these are all new stimuluses that we need to consider. So in my huge summary of what I've kind of spoken about, firstly, there's a level of risk that we all need to be okay with when we're weightlifting. Nothing is inherently safe. We do need to have respect for lifts that we do. We do need to consider external factors that play a role in our risk of injury. And we're trying our best to make every rep look the same, trying to hit that target every single time. For me, I was okay with trying a 1 rep max at that load. I thought it was an okay lift. Might not have counted on like a powerlifting platform, but that's okay. I felt safe and I felt like I try my best to minimize any external risks. And part of that was through my techniques such as bracing and through my repetition over time. Okay. But at the end of it, you know, we want to be training at a higher level, at a higher effort, and we're trying our best to minimize the chance of risk happening.
I like it. Very, very true. Very true.
Look, Nick, let's go through some questions that have come up on our social medias, such as like our Facebook support group. And the first one here is about mentors.
Yes.
Now, the question is, do I need, with a capital N-E-E-D, do I need a mentor for the challenge? So, Nick, would you like to answer this one?
Well, the answer is you do not need N-E-E-D, a mentor for the challenge, simply because there's ample support. I mean, I think that obviously we've got the forum. That's our official support group. That's where you'll get official responses from us, things that are, you know, actually we know that we're saying things that are okay. On the Facebook group, everybody's really helpful. It's amazing. You will get a lot of help, especially I find with the food side of it and things. People will list awesome recipes, things like that. They will also really give you that little bit of support mentally when you're feeling a little bit down, which is also what mentors do. The idea of a mentor isn't necessarily as, it's not a coach, it's a guide. A guide. So it depends where you want to get your guidance from. Now, that's not to detract from people that are mentors. They're amazing. That's an amazing bond and an amazing relationship that you may or may not have. But you certainly don't need to feel that if you're somebody who likes to explore things on your own, and you see everybody with mentors and you think, well, am I not going to be successful because I don't have one? Well, that's not the case. There's plenty of support from us. We're there all the time, aren't we? And then the ambassadors and also challengers that are going through the challenge or have done it previously, there's always someone to lend a hand. And also, especially for that sort of slump that you might have where you go, I'm just not feeling it today, before we even get the chance to respond, there's usually about 20 people saying, you're going to be okay, you just keep going. It's probably one of the most supportive groups I've seen. So you don't have to have anything. You know, you can do what you want to do, what feels right for you. That's my answer. So don't feel like it's not right if you don't have one. So don't stress out about that at all.
No, I like it. Totally agree. The next question here is, can I get results with nutrition alone? Okay. Can I get results with nutrition alone? I think I'll answer this one here. So the first thing in this question is we need to further ask, well, what do you mean by results? Okay. So if you're listening to this and you're thinking, oh, well, can I get results with nutrition alone? Well, what do results mean to you? With nutrition, we can get some great weight loss. We can get some great weight loss, meaning that our current body mass, we can get less body mass. Now, for some of us, our goal isn't just to get smaller. We're not trying to just lose body mass. We're trying to lose body fat. Okay. So simply going on a diet is a great way for us to lose body fat, but also some body muscle, which many of us are trying to hold on to, especially if we want some shape and some tone and some like leanness, you know, that athletic look. We're trying to hold on to muscle. And if we're just dieting or just following a nutrition plan, you know, we are susceptible to muscle loss. And then also other tissues such as, you know, bone mineral density, some hydration and other little bits and pieces as well. So nutrition alone is a great way for us to lose body mass. If results to us mean that we're trying to get stronger or build muscle, the answer would be no. Nutrition alone would not get us the results if we're trying to build muscle or change our shape. We would need to complete some sort of exercise program. I think for many of us, we kind of throw around that idea that, you know, nutrition is 100% or diet is everything, which might not be the complete story, the complete case, where we do, you know, want to promote some sort of training. We want some sort of strength training. We're trying to maintain as much muscle mass as we can, because most of us, we're trying to look athletic. We're trying to, you know, look good naked. We're trying to build, you know, our confidence. We're trying to build our strength. You know, we there's other factors. We don't necessarily just want to lose body mass. Okay.
That'll be my answer. I like that. That's, well, I'll just add one little thing also. When you are building muscle, you can actually feel it in your body, and you have to eat. Doesn't mean you have to eat all the foods and things like that, but it's, you know, that feeling, and it's a different kind of hunger. So, you know, you, the training will sort of, it'll guide you into what you need to eat if you sort of listen a little bit as well to that when you're building muscle, because you actually won't have a choice. You'll turn into an angry animal if you don't get to eat. I'm just saying.
And I do think that, you know, approaching a body transformation simply by just following a diet can actually make it really difficult, actually make it really hard. You know, the ultimate goal is that we're trying to get an energy deficit so that we can lose body mass. We're trying to, you know, lose weight. And, you know, just simply going on a diet or following a nutrition plan is really tough. You know, we face those hungers and those aches. And if we were to utilize other tools, such as maybe increasing our steps or increasing energy expenditure, you might be eating exactly what you're eating right now in terms of volume, quantity, everything. We've got pizzas and ice cream. We're eating everything that we have right now. And all you do is increase the amount of steps you do every day, you start losing weight. And if I was you and I had to choose, okay, do I want to either starve myself and have a horrible time, or eat all the foods that I want to right now and just do a little bit more physical activity, heck, I'll go for a walk every night if that means that I can eat almost whatever I, well, what I'm currently eating. Not that that's a free ticket to eat what you want. But, you know, we utilize those tools, and it might be easier and more optimal if we were focusing on some sort of resistance training. Doesn't mean that we have to go 10 out of 10 effort and do 245 kilos and a deadlift. It can just be going for a walk around the block, doing some bodyweight squats, and maybe doing some sit-ups on the floor. Like, that could be all that we really do, and that starts to build that momentum of things.
I agree.
The next question is, how much cardio do I need to do on the challenge? So, Nick, would you like to answer this one?
Well, once again, it depends. That's our favorite answer, but it does depend. Firstly, it depends what program you're doing, because if you are actually doing the one where you're learning to run, then you need to do your runs. But just let's just assume that we're talking about the basic weight training programs that we have. You know, you're either going to build muscle, lose body fat, a bit of both. We do not say to do quote unquote cardio. We say to do walking. It depends if you classify that as cardio or not. We wouldn't call it that. We'd call it low intensity, steady state. Just something that's going to get you moving. So you're expected to do, I mean, I don't think I'm giving anything away if I say you're expected to do 10,000 steps a day. So that's your walking. The rest of it, we have one day where you might want to do some sort of high intensity interval training, and that's about it. There's no crazy hours of anything on, you know, on a stepper or doing things like that. Apart from your training, because your nutrition will complement your training, and you don't really need to add extra cardio in at this time. As I say a lot, my favorite thing to tell you guys is, yeah, cardio is a tool. So you don't want to grab your whole toolbox and use every single tool to fix something when you only need one spanner. So try the spanner first and then start to introduce more things later. And also with cardio, it is not the magic answer to body composition. It is the answer if you want to learn how to run a marathon. You want to make everything good in the cardio system. But if you are trying to actually maintain muscle mass, you know, get aesthetically the look that you want, you need to actually use your cardio as a tool. You don't want to get your body used to doing, you know, oh, they say to do 10,000, I'm going to do 30,000 steps. What happens then if you're actually not losing any body fat and you want to? Well, now you have to do 5 hours of walking. You know, we want to start conservatively, and then maybe you can amp it up down the track for different reasons. Even the reason that you were saying that maybe you're getting a bit hungrier from your training and you're like, oh, I might add a little bit of an extra walk in so I can still eat a few foods that I want to eat and fuel my training. So it's sort of, once you learn that it's a little bit of, it's actually a tool, it's not a necessity, it's not something, apart from physical heart health, it's not something that you need to use. Like they put on ads, you know, for gyms and that, people sweating over a spin bike. You don't have to do that for body composition. And I'm assuming that that's the question that they're asking. Because most people really, want to look good. That's really the bottom line. Apart from everything else, we all want to be badasses, but we also want to look good.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think many do get that feeling that they need to do, you know, maybe like fasted cardio in the morning, or they need to do the 3 hours on a treadmill or a stepper or whatever every day, and that's the only way to get results. And if anything, I would say that that might be suboptimal when we're trying to change our body composition, when we're trying to burn body fat, where we're trying to, you know, build some tone in our muscles, some shape, you know, to get ripped. I would say lots and lots of cardio might be suboptimal. And if anything, we want to prioritize resistance training. We're trying to prioritize building muscle or maintaining as much muscle as we can while we kind of go through this energy deficit of a exactly. nutrition plan.
Because the thing is, it's like excess baggage on a plane. It's expensive to maintain muscle. So your body wants to get rid of that first. So it's actually not going to say, oh, I'm going to get rid of this exact bit of fat right now when you're doing 4 hours of cardio. It's going to go, what is costing me the most? Oh, this expensive muscle tissue, or I'm going to leave it in the bin before I board the plane. You know, that kind of a thing. So muscle is expensive and priceless. It should live in a pyramid. In a circle. I don't know. But like it's so important. It's like an Egyptian cat.
I like it. The Sphinx. Okay. Yeah. Last question here. Should I work out in the morning or the evening? Okay. I think I'll answer this one
here.
Okay. Now the first thing that I want to say is that a training session, a workout is better than no workout. Okay. So if you're worried that you can only train in the morning and you're thinking that, is it better to train in the morning versus in the evening? Well, first other thing I'd say is that doing a training session is better than not doing a session, regardless if it's optimal or not, okay? The next thing I would say is that your preference is probably more important than anything else. So if you like training in the morning or you can only train in the morning, great, keep going. Or if you like training in the evening, great, keep going. I would say that there is a little bit of individual preference where, you know, if someone identifies themselves as a night owl, they probably don't want to be training in the morning. Or if someone, you know, is an early riser and really likes to be productive in the morning, okay, maybe training in the morning is for you. For me, come like 7 p.m., I am dead to the world. I'm tired, I'm getting sleepish. And for me, like training earlier in the day is my preference. That's just my preference.
I agree. Yeah. Same.
Talking about like the pros and cons of either side of our, you know, circadian rhythm, if we're training in the morning, our challenge may be that, you know, we might be still sleepy from our morning. We may have missed some nutrition. So if you wake up at 6 a.m. and you're training at 6:15, okay, you might not have had many meals in the day. So your kind of nutritional side of things might be slightly lower than someone if they're training in the afternoon where they've had 3 or 4 meals in the day. They're full of energy and they may be able to train a little bit harder in the afternoon, okay? And then the other thing, like I said earlier, is about hydration. So if you're waking up at 6 a.m. and you're training at 6:15, you haven't really had a chance to absorb much water. Even if you've gone and guzzled a liter of water, you might not have had a chance to absorb that yet. So, you know, your tissues might not be completely hydrated. Okay, so there's some challenges that we face in the morning. And then in contrast, in the evening, you know, after, let's say, a full day of work, if you're working 9 to 5 and you're trying to go to the gym at 6 p.m., gosh, you might be tired from working 9 to 5 and maybe coming home, trying to feed the kids and then running off to the gym. You've had a big day. You might not be training at 10 out of 10 effort in the evening. So we face some problems there. And then on the flip side, when it comes to like bedtime, if we're training really close to bedtime, we might be missing out on some of this post-workout nutrition that we know is really important. So if you're finishing your workout at 9:30 and then you have like, you know, a protein shake and then maybe a nighttime shake and you go to bed, you know, you may benefit from actually having like a good meal after you train to help replenish some of the, you know, glycogen stores and the other factors. So training on the evening side of things faces its own challenges. I think it really comes down to it, training around this lunchtime is kind of like the best of both worlds. If anything, like that Like just after lunch might be a good time, or quote, most optimal, end quote. Because the reason why would be, you know, you've had some time to wake up from the morning, you've had some time to have a couple of meals in, you've had some time to get adequately hydrated, you're not super fatigued from the day, and, you know, we have some space for some meals afterwards in the evening. So that time might be the more optimal time for us to train. However, logistically, many of us can't train unless you live a lifestyle, maybe like Nick and I, where we are free in the daytimes, but in the mornings and evenings is probably where we're doing most of our, you know, daily work. So as a super summary, firstly, a workout is better than no workout. Number two would be that your preference is probably more important than any sort of optimal three thing. And then number three, there are some kind of challenges that we face if you're training in the morning or in the evening. And then number four, it might be more optimal if we're looking at that midday training session.
Yeah, perfect. Love it.
Well, look, Nick, I think we should wrap it up there for episode number 32 of the Challenge Weekly Show. If you've liked this episode, let us know. You can share this episode on your social medias. You can tag us, even send us a message saying that you're enjoying the show. We always love those messages as well.
I'm getting those. Thanks, everybody.
We'll catch you next week for episode number 33.
Yay.